Hello and welcome to Value Research Podcasts. You are listening to the Fund Manager Interviews. Stay tuned for insightful conversations on the markets, funds, and professional journeys of the fund managers. For today's interaction, I'm joined by my colleague Chirag and Ihab Dalwai, Fund Manager at ICICI Prudential Mutual Fund. Welcome, Ihab.
Yeah, hi. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for taking time for this interaction. Now, Ihab, you joined ICICI Prudential in 2011. So can you tell our viewers what sparked your interest in equity investing?
Yeah. So just to give a bit of a background about my educational endeavor. So I pursued commerce and after that, I had done my CA as well. So post that, the conventional route for a chartered accountant is either he takes up an audit assignment or works in taxation. But I had more inclination towards financial markets because in my personal capacity also, in a small amount or in small context, I had started investing as well. So I had some inclination, but I didn't have too much of understanding about equities as a market and didn't have understanding of how institutions invest in equities. So that's why I got an inclination towards ICICI Prudential joining them or at least trying to apply to get my first job after I passed out from my CA. And it is important to note that 2011, when I joined ICICI Prudential mutual fund industry was not as big as what it is today. So the team structure or the team size was also pretty small. So the ability or the opportunity which I could have got was also better than if someone is trying to look at the mutual fund industry today, because the industry is pretty big today versus what it was 10 years or 12 years back.
You started your career at ICICI Pru as a research analyst. Can you describe the journey from an analyst to a fund manager and share the key insights you gained during your time as an analyst?
The advantage of working on the buy side and especially at one of the largest domestic mutual fund is that we have access to a large amount of sell side brokers as well. So in terms of the learning curve of an buy side analyst when he takes up a new sector is also pretty quick, because he has access to this vast amount of information or reports which the sell side analyst published. He has access to the historical notes which the organization has also built, or the knowledge database which the buy side organization has built. So building up capabilities or understanding a sector should be a quick is generally a quick journey for a buy side research analyst. The key takeaways or key understandings which I've learned as a research analyst has been that whenever one takes up a sector, he needs to understand the industry structure of the the sector which he's trying to understand. And generally, there are times if it's a cyclical sector, you need to identify where are you in the cycle when you're tracking a particular sector. Is the sector going through a tough phase or the sector going through a good phase? And even if it's a structural sector, like it's not a cyclical sector, you need to understand whether the players in the industry are over-earning or under-earning. So if you have these thought process at a slightly top-down level within a sector, you can take a bit of a sector call as well, because in mutual fund or at least in buy side, the fund managers eventually have to take a sector call, because a sector can also be a source of alpha as well for the fund manager. So as an analyst, one needs to do a bit of understanding the industry structure, conduct of players in the industry. And then along with that, obviously the typical workload of an analyst is to meet the company, meet various participants of that sector, be it a supplier or a customer of your company under coverage. And then assess management quality through historical, either corporate actions of the company or historical capital allocation which the company has done. And then form a view of on that particular stock. But from a buy-side research analyst, it is also important that once you form the view on the particular stock, it is important that the analyst communicates his view clearly to the fund management team, because the job doesn't stop there. Like even if I have formed a strong view on a particular stock, communicating it to the fund management team, convincing that the fund managers and ultimately ensuring that the organization or the fund has made alpha based on your view. I think that is a satisfying conclusion to the entire process of the analysis which the research analyst done. So I think this entire circle is important. The job doesn't stop at only finding the right stock to invest in.
All right, now Ehab, in managing schemes like the ICICI Prudential Balanced Advantage Fund and the, you know, ICICI Prudential Multi-Asset Fund alongside 5 to 6 other fund managers, how do you collaborate and divide responsibilities to ensure effective management?
That's a good question. So if I take multi-asset fund as an example, there are like the product structure is such that there are multiple avenues or multiple asset classes which one can invest in. Mm-hmm. So the responsibility of each of the fund manager is towards the asset class which he's required to look after. So we will have a commodity fund manager. We would have a debt fund manager. Then I look after the equity portion of the multi-asset fund. Then there is the CIO is also involved in the multi-asset fund. So his role is more towards asset allocation, trying to determine what should be the net equity level, what should be the commodities level. And then we have one person to look after derivatives as well, because these products are dynamically managed. So we need to do, at least in the balance advantage fund, we need to do almost like a daily rebalancing. So there we use a bit of derivatives as well to achieve the net equity level. So there is a fund manager to do derivatives out here. So the roles and responsibilities of each of them is defined and assigned. And generally we get together when there is a discussion around what should be the net equity level or how much equity or how much capital has to be allocated to each asset class. So for the balance advantage fund, it is purely a model driven fund. So the net equity is determined by the model. But when it comes to the multi-asset fund, there is a fund management's involvement in determining what should be the net equity level. So there, I would say broadly the thought process which we've adopted in balance advantage fund and also in the multi-asset fund is a bit of a counter-cyclical thought process. Is that when valuations are rich, when earnings have been delivered, we would want to be in at a lower equity level, and the inverse as well. When valuations are cheap and when earnings are also suppressed, we would want to have a very high equity allocation. So this core philosophy is something which is common across most of the fund managers. So rarely, I think directionally, we would be in sync in where should be the net equity level. The intensity may be somewhat up or down here and there, but there, like I mentioned, we get into a discussion, we get together, and then we try to figure out where we should be at. So that's how. But it's a discussion, and the outcome of the discussion, we all tend to agree upon it, and then we execute that the actionable.
Yeah, but another thing was, you know, as a fund manager, what unique perspective or strategies do you contribute to the portfolios you manage?
So the broader investment philosophy or investment thought process which you've adopted, especially in the multi-asset fund and to some extent in the other two funds as well, is something which I think Naren has also been doing for long, is having a counter-cyclical approach to investing. That is trying to identify segments or sectors in the market where there is certain temporary issues, but we are positive on the long-term recovery of that particular sector or stock, or the medium to long-term outlook for that particular sector or stock is intact. Because I strongly believe is that only in those times or those moments that you get a disproportion between the value of the business and the price which you are paying for that business. So that's when we can enter into the company at a discount to its fair value. And that's when we can expect a good return experience or alpha experience for the product. So that is the broad philosophy or strategy which you've adopted in multi-asset fund as well, and the other two pure equity funds which I look up.
No, you have the thing I just wanted to understand, you know, so there are multiple fund managers managing the schemes like balance advantage and multi-asset fund. So what new approach or what the unique approach do you bring to the table in terms of the fund management?
So when it comes to the equity portion, it is the dedicated equity fund manager. So in multi-asset fund, I'm involved in the equity portion of it. So it is my responsibility to manage the entire equity portion of it. So it is not split or divided between the other fund managers. Like I mentioned earlier, was that there would be a commodity fund manager. His job is to manage the commodity portion. So I will not get too much involved into how he manages the commodity portion of the multi-asset fund, and the debt fund manager would manage the debt portion. So there again, I wouldn't get involved into how he manages the debt portion. He also will not get involved in how I manage the equity portion. So once the net allocation is decided amongst each of these asset classes, it is the respective fund manager of each asset class to determine how he wants to manage that portion of capital and try to generate alpha within that allocated capital.
Right. Ehab, you touched upon the investment philosophy, the broad investment philosophy that you follow. Can you go further ahead and tell us what type of stocks or market conditions or investment opportunities particularly resonate with you?
I think it is an all seasons or all weather strategy, because there will always be sectors or segments of the market which would be under certain stress or would be an out of favor segment. Mm-hmm. Because market is not evened out like what indices are, right? There would be some segments which would be trading at a very high multiple where earnings are very high, and some segment of the market where valuations is lower and earnings are also suppressed. So one can divide market in at most points of time into a favored sector and an unfavored sector. So the thought process or the core investment philosophy is that what market or market participants tend to do is that in terms of a favored sector, they tend to overestimate the earnings and they are over optimistic about the earnings potential, and they end up giving a higher valuation to it. So the scope of making potential returns from a favored sector is generally lower. But what happens in an unfavored sector is that there is a lot of pessimism around the earnings as well. So the earnings estimates are also understated. And on top of that, you have a lower multiple. So the scope of making potential returns from an unfavored sector is very high. So having this broad philosophy, I think there are always cases or situations in the market where you would find some segments which are unfavored or not favored. So just to give an example, like 3 years ago, I think PSU as a pack was one of the most unfavored sector because valuations were dirt cheap. They were available at a single multiple in terms of PE. Dividend yield was higher than what GSEC yield was as well in those sectors. But the sector has transitioned from being one of the least favored sector to one of the favored sector today, looking at how the stocks have delivered return or the segment has delivered return. So this transition also helps you generate good returns or good alpha. So the endeavor of this strategy is to always try to identify these sectors or segments of the market which are not in favor today. And obviously, this has to be backed by a positive research viewer and outlook. See, generally, market is not wrong. Like, market doesn't like a particular segment or sector because the potential of it to deliver earnings return, earnings growth, or to surprise on earnings is low. But if our research view is of the view that there is a potential that earnings would pick up, there's an expectation that earnings can beat consensus, I think, and it is an unfavored sector, I think we, at least the investment strategy bets heavily on that.
All right. Or any stock, or say, what characteristics make a stock a compelling investment choice for you? Like, unfavored, I got that point. But apart from that,
one has to see the historical earnings of that particular sector or stock as well. So today, if to give an example, if there's margin historically, it makes it around 15% margin, and then today it's at around 4%, 5%. Then you know that it is under earning today. Mm-hmm. Then from an analyst perspective, he has to answer why it is under-earning. Is it because of high competitive intensity, or is it because of some raw material pressure? So we need to figure out why it is under-earning. then if our view is that this under-earning is something temporary and we expect the margins to recover, I think that is something which is one characteristics of the style of investing. Second is, from an industry structure perspective also, what we like a lot is that if the sector is consolidating, that is also a very good indication that the future potential or future profitability is expected to be very good.
Mm-hmm.
But if a lot of players are entering into a particular sector, then the potential of future profitability is weak. So that's why we look at how the industry structure is shifting. Is it consolidating? Is it fragmenting? So that is also plays an important role in identifying stocks, understanding how the industry is played out. One other view is ownership as well. So at times you would see that sector being most favored, being widely owned, the transition from widely owned to not being owned or sparsely being owned also shows a transition from a favored to an unfavored sector or stock. So that also can be an indication that the sector has moved into an unfavored territory or zone.
Yeah, from your talks, it looks like, you know, you are more like a value tilted, like the fund house particularly. So do you run this value strategy across the four funds you manage, or in the large and mid cap, do you have some different strategy in selecting the stocks?
Correct. So see, the investment philosophy or style is counter cyclical. So there can be times where a quality segment or a quality sector of the market also falls into it. There can be time when a growth sector or a segment of the market can also fall into it. So my basic understanding of styles of investing, be it value, growth or quality, these are generally the first filter which the fund manager or the person looking at the stock looks at. So what a value investor would do, he would put a first filter of valuation and say, is the stock cheap or no? What a growth investor will do, the first filter he'll put is that, is there growth in earnings or revenue or no? And what a quality investor would do is that he would see whether there's ROE in the business or no. So he wouldn't want to invest in a business which is low ROE, because that is not, doesn't meet his first filter. But I'm of the view, post this first filter, your stock will do well if the other two triggers, one of the two triggers work. So the example is that if one is a value investor, he buys something cheap, a stock will deliver returns only when there is growth in the company or when there is improvement in ROE in that company. So the delta in the other two is only what is going to give you growth, and the other two are the triggers for the stock to do well. So the point I'm trying to make is, being a counter-cyclical or a contrarian investor doesn't mean that he's tilted towards value. So to give an example, value as a segment has done phenomenally well over the last 3 years. So as a contrarian investor or a counter-cyclical investor, one has to tilt away from value and trying to find segments of the market which may be today in quality as a basket, quality at reasonable price as a basket, to be invested in. So the tilt, if someone's following this philosophy to its core, he has to tilt away from value as a segment to quality at a reasonable price as a segment.
So right now, you're finding good opportunity in the quality at the reasonable price stocks?
To some extent, because that segment of the market has underperformed. Like I mentioned, there are some segments which are going through some temporary issues. Be it lack of volume growth or be it lack of some segment of their business not doing well. So that is there. So like till last year, it was easier to say pharma and auto were two segments of the market which fit into the counter cyclical segment of investing, because though four-wheelers volume had recovered, two-wheeler volumes had not recovered. So that was one segment which one could have invested in. Pharma was looking interesting because US generic was under stress till last year, but these two segments again has done well over the last 1 year. So I think quality at reasonable price is something which looks comforting today.
If we look at the portfolio of ICICI Prudential large and mid cap fund, though there is an infrastructure fund, but if this is the pure equity fund, ICICI Pru large and mid cap, there are top holdings such as ICICI Bank, HDFC Banks, Infosys, that have not done well in the last past 1 year. So The question is, under what circumstances do you decide to exit a stock?
Yeah. So, in terms of the top holding, these are basically mega caps, and from a capitalization perspective, preference today is towards mega caps and large caps, because mid and small caps have done phenomenally well. The potential return perspective looks better in large caps versus mid and small cap. That's why the preference is towards mega cap and large caps. See, to your question of how one should build a sell discipline and how one should look at selling a particular stock, generally, most of the times what has happened is that the view has played out and the outcome is a desirable outcome. And generally, you try to sell when there is when the stock comes to fair value, goes above fair value, and you have a better switch idea to move to. So those are ideal situations where one can look to sell and easier decisions to make. I think the tougher decisions are generally when you have a stock which has not done well and you want to sell that stock. So generally, we need to understand that why the stock is not doing well, A, on the first instance. Generally, what I've seen is that if leverage is a problem for the stock to not do well, then it is very difficult for the company to come out, because for him to come out, then he would need to raise equity, and then equity gets diluted to a significant level. So if leverage is a problem, then I think one has to say that it's a stop loss and one needs to exit that company. If leverage is not a problem, then I think it is, you accept that the thesis has gone wrong. But one should not be in a hurry to sell, because even if the trend is against you, if the cycle is against you, there can be some instances or a short-term rally which can happen in that stock. And that's when one should look to sell, because it doesn't make sense to sell in a hurry and impact the price if leverage is not a problem. If leverage is a problem, then one needs to exit, and because there's no way out, because equity gets diluted to a great extent. And one more point I wanted to make was that one needs to have a portfolio approach to looking at things, because obviously when you invest, there might be certain stocks which you will not play out and you may go wrong. But from a risk management, from a portfolio perspective, one needs to cap weightages in that stock so that it doesn't impact the overall performance of the portfolio. So if you can restrict the weightage to the stocks where you think the view has gone wrong, it doesn't impact the overall performance of the portfolio to a great extent.
Yeah. Yep. The next thing you know, I was just looking at the portfolio of ICICI Prudential Multi-Asset. And across the 2023, you know, on an average, there has been the cash levels of around 16% to 18% kind of thing. So do you think the high valuations in markets are narrowing the investment opportunities in the multi-asset fund?
So the approach we've adopted in multi-asset fund is that obviously our balance advantage fund is a valuation-based model. So we've adopted that in the multi-asset fund as well. But something extra which we've added, or at least the way I end up thinking, is that I need to look at where is the earnings cycle. So for that, I look at this simple chart of corporate profitability to GDP as a ratio. So when I look at this chart, historically, this ratio has been within a range of 2%, as low as 2%, and goes as high as 6-6.5%. So post-COVID, during COVID, it had gone to as low as 2%. But even after the post-COVID recovery, markets had rallied. Valuation models were saying that markets are high. But the earnings model was saying that there is still scope of earnings recovery. It was only in last year that the earnings or the corporate profitability to GDP has gone up to almost 5.5%, may have touched 6% now. So from here on, it is slightly difficult for corporate profits to grow higher than nominal GDP, because then this ratio has to expand higher, which historically has not been the case. So when I look at index level earnings growth also of various other broking houses, the growth estimate is similar to what the corporate profit GDP growth is now. So in this environment, when your earnings have also recovered, when your valuations are also on the slightly on the higher side, we thought it is prudent for us to reduce the net equity level over the last 12 months. But March again gave us an opportunity, March 23, because markets had corrected, valuations had normalized. We had again increased our net equity level in the multi-asset fund. But post that, as the markets have rallied, the equity level has been lower than what it has been historically.
So, yeah, I was just looking at the portfolio of all the four equity funds which you manage, and top 5 to 7 holdings looks the same. So is it the strategy of that particular kind, or what is the reason, you know, having the same stocks across the four schemes?
Yeah, so the three schemes, it would end up being quite similar, provided the mandate allows it to invest in it. Balance Advantage Fund, I have my colleague Raja Chandak, who is the lead portfolio manager out there. So there the equity allocation would be different than what you see in the multi-asset fund. Like I mentioned earlier, the thought process or the investment approach is similar in terms of how I go about selecting sectors or stocks to invest in. That there would be a decent overlap in these portfolios. But a few of these mandates are unique. So like infrastructure mandate is unique. Within infrastructure, these subsectors of infrastructure also, there are a lot of mid and small caps out there. So you would see the mid and small cap allocation infrastructure fund being higher than what it would be in the rest of the two funds. Because the investment universe is predominantly within the mid and small cap space. Similarly, large and mid also has its own restrictions that the fund needs to maintain minimum 65% and mid cap. So multi-asset fund is something which is totally unconstrained. There would be overlaps, but it would be subject to the structure of each of these funds.
Coming to the ICICI Prudential Balanced Advantage Fund, it hasn't done well in recent times. What do you think is dragging its performance?
See, from a portfolio construct, stock picking, or a sector allocation perspective, I think the fund has done well, because when I look at these holdings in the portfolio, they are pretty they have contributed to the alpha. One thing is that one has to understand from a risk perspective, within the hybrid offering, the stacking up of the funds is such that equity and debt fund would be higher on risk. So as a result of which, the return expectation should be higher out there. Then comes the multi-asset fund, which is expected to have a lower risk. So the return expectation should be slightly lower than that. And then comes the balance advantage fund from a risk perspective. So the return expectation also should be slightly lower for a balance advantage fund. The advantage of a balance advantage fund investor versus a multi-asset fund investor is that he would experience lesser volatility. The expectation is that he would experience lesser volatility versus what the other hybrid schemes would invest in. So if one does a risk-adjusted analysis of the returns, I think it should do well in terms of versus other products or versus other balance advantage fund products as well.
Can you just tell us about the model which, you know, balance advantage fund follows?
So this is a model which we've been following for like almost a decade now, or more than that. It is primarily a simple valuation based model, but the thought behind the model is, like I mentioned, is a counter-cyclical model which says that as valuations go up, you need to reduce your net equity level to a great extent, or to most, like there is no momentum indicator which has been introduced into the model. It is completely counter-cyclical, because the core philosophy is that when market is expensive, you need to protect capital, and when market is cheap, you need to aggressively deploy capital. The thought process is that in a downfall, if you can protect capital and then deploy that capital in a downfall, the long term or over the cycles, the investor's experience is going to be pretty decent. So that is a long term approach, a long term understanding which you adopted while building this model. And obviously the product is a successful product for us. And over a long period of time has delivered decent.
So basically, in terms of valuation, you look at only price earnings thing, or is there any other factors for the valuation for the equity segment?
So we prefer price to book versus price to earnings, because though today earnings are pretty stable, but there can be phases like COVID, or there can be phases where a lot of global uncertainty where earnings can be pretty volatile. So to move net equity level based on PE becomes a bit of a challenge in a volatile earning environment. So we needed a stable denominator. So we've chosen price to book as an indicator. And generally, banking having a significant weightage in the index generally trades at price to book. So I think it was a better indicator to adopt.
Lastly, just wanted to understand on the ICICI Prudential Infrastructure Fund, what is the broad mandate of this fund? Because if you look at the portfolio, then you are it's tilted towards the banking sector compared to the construction sector as a category. So what is the thinking of this portfolio?
See, when I look at infrastructure as a theme, right? So it has to be viewed in a broader context, because there will be a lot of other subcategories or sub-segments or sub-sectors which one can invest in. So the thought process which I've adopted is that I need to keep on a medium-term basis trying to switch from sectors which have done well into sectors which have not done well. So I think the investment universe is quite broad. What it can't invest in is like in IT, it can't invest in pharma, it can't invest in auto OEMs. So these are the segments which it can't invest in, but most of the other parts of the market is quite open for it to invest in. So construction is obviously one segment of it, but there are other segments as well. Like power is also something which is considered within infrastructure. So there are asset owners as well, power, port, and then oil and gas as well as a part of infrastructure. So the universe is quite broad, and banking as well, because banking ultimately lends to these asset creation or lends to these EPC players to construct in terms of working capital. So that is also a part of the universe. So the goal of me is to take active bets on each segment which I think can deliver returns. And then once they've delivered returns, try to find the next sub-segment which can deliver returns. So cement is also a big portion of it.
All right. With that, Ehab, I think it's time for us to wrap up this chat. Thank you for taking the time for this interaction.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thank you.